I took a stance that when anyone ever tried to make fun of my speech or, you know, laugh during a presentation, I'd stare at them. Because I thought that if they're making fun of my speech, they're uncomfortable. So I would try and make them as uncomfortable as possible.
Wow.
So just staring at them.
Wow.
They would stop most of the time.
The Dylan Reed Experience, today on Stutter Talk.
Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes, and I'd like to welcome to Stutter Talk for the first time, Dylan Reed. How's it going, Dylan?
It's going great.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning. This will be episode 327 for April 1st, 2012. Dylan Reed is a 20-year-old sophomore at Appalachian State University, majoring in marketing with a minor in international business. Is a member of the local chapter of the National Stuttering Association up there at Appalachian, and a member of the AHO rugby team. Dylan, thank you again for joining us at Stutter Talk. We met recently at the Friends Conference, the one-day workshop in North Carolina, and you really impressed me and everybody in the room. You really had us in the palm of your hands with your speech. And after your speech, I wanted to meet you, but I came up to you and said, I really wanted to meet your parents because they seem to have done something right, because you really came with this attitude of, I stutter, but my stuttering's not going to hold me back. And it felt like you attributed a lot of that to your parents. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Growing up, my parents never allowed me to hide behind my speech, in that the sole reason for why I didn't want to do things, if I ever said my speech, then my parents would just say, no, you have to do this. I know you might not want to, but it'll help you. And being younger, I didn't really understand why me not talking would have been a big issue. But now that I'm old and a bit more wiser, I see that if I was allowed to hide behind my speech at a young age, that I don't think I'd progress to where I am now, that I can go into any situation and not fear my speech. You know, it's a really good thing to not be able to say, oh, I stutter, so I can't do this. It's more of like, hey, I'll be late for a class, I can't do this, you know?
Oh, yeah, and you know, you've told me on air and off air that your parents, they wouldn't let you... They wouldn't let stuttering hold you back. They wouldn't let you be silent because of your stuttering. I mean, it just sounds like they really had an insider's view on how to help you cope with stuttering. Did either of your parents stutter?
Neither of them actually stuttered. I can't trace anywhere in my family of a person who stuttered or stuttered at a certain point in time. So I'm a trailblazer in the whole speech department for my family.
It's really great that they knew somehow not to let you fall into hiding and to avoiding, or at least as much as they could. You know, can you give the listeners an example or two of how they wouldn't let you hide or hold yourself back because of stuttering?
Definitely. Through school, I had to get IEPs for my speech and all that, through my speech pathologist and my school. And during the conferences, they'd always ask my parents and me if I wanted to have special privileges when it came to speaking out in class. And my mom was real big on saying, you know, it's up to him, but I'd prefer him to talk in class and during class. And I'm not one to disobey my parents, So I just went along with what she said. And we had a presentation. It hits home one time in eighth grade, actually, when I just moved to North Carolina. We had to give a presentation of a history assignment. And I wrote a fairly decent paper, I thought, and I decided to go first. So it's my first month in a brand new school in North Carolina that I've been in for under 2 months, and I didn't know anyone. So I volunteered to go first. And what should have been a 10-minute presentation, it turned into a half-hour one. And the entire time, I wasn't angry about how long it took or how my speech affected what I was doing, because I could see on the kids' faces that they were generally interested in what I had to say and how I was saying it. So I guess if I grew up in a different mindset, I would have been afraid to speak in front of these brand new kids that I have no clue who they are. And I don't think I'd have experienced the same things that if I was held back through my speech.
So you mentioned a few minutes ago about having an IEP, which is an individualized educational plan. And just for the listeners who don't know, that's basically a document between a family and the school system or the state, which says that the child is disabled and the child would require these services, you know, speech class, resource room, occupational therapy. So your IEP had speech class on it for stuttering, is that correct?
Yeah, for stuttering, yeah.
Now, see, what's really interesting, well, first of all, let me ask you, were you at those meetings? Did you attend your own IEP meetings?
I did. I went to, I think, almost all of them. It was when I turned 18, so my last year of high school, that I actually did it myself because I was an adult and wow. I wanted to try it.
When did you start receiving speech class? Or I should say speech therapy.
First grade, the only type of therapy I've ever had was through the school because I didn't think my stuttering was that big of an issue. You know, sure, I stutter, but I think it more defines who I am. So if I stutter, like, that's just another quirk that I have. I enjoy it. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is a lot of fun. And you meet great people through this.
Definitely.
This stickiness of the tongue, shall we say. So I just want to make this really clear. So you, in first grade, you were attending your own IEP meetings.
Yeah.
Please.
I don't think I understood what was happening because I didn't know what the IEP thing stood for until you had just told me. So I've been kind of out of the whole loop about what it was.
But you know, just so you and the listeners know, it's highly unusual for young children to attend their own IEP meetings. And if they do, they're usually playing with a puzzle at the smaller table, at the kids' table. So you were aware that people in the room, your teacher, your speech therapist, your parents, were talking about your stuttering and how to help you with your stuttering?
I'm pretty sure I was, because I was talked to by some teachers through my elementary schooling about what I wanted to do speech-wise. And my speech teacher was always forthcoming in telling me what I could do to try and help my whole speech and what I thought that I could do to help it. So it was a very big give and take type of thing, which I guess I learned a lot from because it obviously worked, I guess.
Let's remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk speaking with Dylan Reed, a sophomore at Appalachian State University in North Carolina. So, you know, for the speech pathologists listening, I think it's very, as I said before, it's pretty unusual that we'd have young children attend a meeting, and especially for stuttering. I mean, most of my colleagues in the schools, I think, are fairly hesitant to talk so openly about stuttering in front of the child with a parent. I can imagine a lot of whispering going on. But it sounds like that wasn't the case with you. It doesn't sound like there was any whispering or hush-hushness about your stuttering.
No. It all goes back to my parents. They're very big on the whole, don't allow it to get you down. So I guess from a very young age, they've always been forthright and forthcoming in anything that they would do about it. They've taken a very big backseat to it, just allow me to bloom however I'll bloom and turn out. But they've put the guiding steps there to get to where I am. So I guess from a very young age, to them, it's not a thing to hide. So the more you speak about it and the more that you're around it, the more comfortable that I would have been with how I dealt with my stuttering. And it worked because I don't have an issue with talking about it or doing anything through my speech. So,
you know, I recently reviewed a 2009 study that's in review from the National Stuttering Association, meaning it's not published yet, but they do plan to submit it for publication. And it was with about 700 or I think a few more than 700 people who stutter. And as I'm looking at it now, only 4.4% said that their speech therapy in grade school was very successful. And 62.1% said it was not at all successful. But it seems like you might be one of the few who, I don't want to put words in your mouth. So in your own words, was your speech therapy at that young age helpful or successful for you, or how would you describe it?
Well, in first grade, I had a very big, like, stammer, so I would repeat syllables a lot. So I guess from the point of stuttering, it helped a whole lot, because I went from a stammering, just a very big repetition talker, to more of a prolongation type of stutter. So I guess through the whole aspect of stuttering, it helped a lot, because I'm here now and I can string a sentence together and not have too much trouble. But the biggest help that my speech therapy had was that we could talk about my stuttering. And I guess it helped me to put it in a light where I can talk about it. Because a big issue, I think, with a lot of people who do stutter is they haven't been put in a place to talk about it, so they can't understand it. And for me, the way that I understand my own speech is through talking about it to people, to anyone who will have an open ear. So the therapy helped tremendously in understanding my speech and understanding why I do it and understanding how I can get better at it.
Wow, that's so powerful what you just said. So the biggest help for you was talking about stuttering. Can you remember how your speech therapist and you would discuss stuttering? Like, how would she bring it up with you, or what would you guys talk about?
We would do the whole basic, like, the easy onset, the flashcards, you know, the deep breath exercises and all that. But at the end of the day, we took, like, 20 minutes, and she just asked me how my day was. And I'd start to talk, and then she'd ask me, like, I'd say, well, I had a tough time in this class because a kid was talking about my speech, and she she just, I guess, let me carry the conversation, and she'd give her two cents in that would force me to think about how I felt during those times. And I don't think at the time I consciously knew what I was doing, but now that I am a bit older and understand a bit more, she was really getting me to open up about it and allow me to speak freely about it and not shy away from talking about it. So at a young age, I thought that I was just a first grader that talked kind of weird and it'll go away. But now the whole talking about it that young, it really got me okay with speaking about it right now. So no, she helped tremendously.
And it sounds like from what you just described that she was a really good listener, that she listened to you talk about stuttering.
Yeah, that's definitely how the whole thing was. No, and she gave her two cents about what I can do to help it with the easy onset, you know, eye contact, deep breath, and all that. But she would learn more, I guess, from hearing how I viewed it and how it helped me. I guess it was a two-way street. It helped her and to help me just having me speak about it so I could understand my whole speech more. Because if I understood my speech better, then she could learn more from me because I'm more educated about it.
This is Stutter Talk with Dylan Reed at Appalachian State University. So, Dylan, when did you first meet other people who stutter? Were you a child? Were you a teen or an adult?
I was a junior in high school before I met another person who stuttered.
Wow. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yeah, definitely. I was taking speech class back in Raleigh, and my teacher for my school system, we had to do a thing called the graduation project, and I based mine about my speech, so about stuttering, and I brought it to my speech pathologist for some help, and we had an idea to create, I guess, a DVD type of thing about stuttering for my project. And so she got a couple other kids in the school who stuttered to come in and talk, and so the very first time I met these kids was just asking them if they would want to be, like, taped and if I could ask them questions. So the first time was very kind of, I guess, formal. So it was kind of new to me. So I didn't think that, oh, I'm about to meet another kid who stutters. I'm like, I'm about to meet people that might help my project gain insight from other people's.
I'm sorry, I just cut you off. I'm so sorry.
That's fine.
When I hear this, I mean, like, I was so scared to meet another person who stutters, and I think it's easy to, like, say now why that was, but I really think it was something about if I met another person who stutters and I acknowledged it, that would somehow mean I was really a stutterer. Like, this thing wasn't going to go away. That it would somehow not label me a stutterer, but confirm or solidify that I was a stutterer. But you didn't have any of those type of feelings?
Not at all. I like that I stutter. And I think it puts me in a better place to some people. And for me, to meet another person who stuttered, I could learn more from them than I could have from a person who didn't stutter, because they've lived with it and they might know some hints and tips that might help me through my speech. So I was more excited to meet other people who stutter because they might have some some tip that might help me through my speech or some experience that I could learn from. And the people I met in my high school, you know, they had a rough time with their speech. And because I didn't allow it to, you know, put me down or hold me back. So I thought I taught them a little bit about how to live a more carefree style with stuttering. Because, to be honest, I don't let it get to me at all. You know, I don't let it deter me from speaking out in front of people. You know, I gave a speech in D.C. in front of 400 people, you know. So I was really excited to meet other people who stutter.
So you gave a speech in D.C. Was that at a stuttering conference or something else?
It was actually for the National Young Leadership Conference in Washington, D.C.
How did you deal with your stuttering when speaking in front of 400 people? Did you stutter noticeably? Did you mention your stuttering? Did you have a little humor about your stuttering? Like, what was your approach?
I just kind of dove foot first. I try to never start off any type of communication with people that, hey, I stutter. Because more often than not, I stutter on my name. So it's kind of thrown out there from the very first point. But I just dove feet first. And I don't think about my stuttering when it goes into an action. I thought, hey, this was going to be a fun experience. I'll talk in front of lots of people. So I just volunteered to speak, and I just jumped into it.
Now, this might sound absurd to some of the listeners or even to you, but when I was older and first started to deal with my stuttering in my 20s, I always was a little envious of stutterers like you who stuttered more overtly than I did, because I was so covert that mm-hmm. I could just hide my stuttering. So I always took the, not always, but I started to start presentations and speeches by telling people I stuttered, because I could go 20 minutes or longer or entire presentations hiding my stuttering. Mm-hmm. So I just had to get in a place where it was okay to stutter. So I personally found that just telling people I stutter and throwing in some good stuttering was what I needed to do. But our paths are very different. I mean, you are somebody who sounds like you always stuttered overtly. Do you have any memories of covert periods of your life where you tried to hide your stuttering, where you changed words, where you, you know, raised your hand in class and gave the wrong answer to not stutter, or didn't raise your hand in class because you didn't want to stutter, like those type of things?
A lot of the times that I could only, well, that I did that was not answering a question. And it's not that I was afraid to stutter. It was that as soon as I opened my mouth, I felt the stutter. So I just kind of sat there and was trying to breathe and get over the little conniption fit that I was having. And by the time that I got done, you know, another smart kid answered the question and I lost my chance.
So you had that initial, that block which couldn't let you get started. I see. But yeah. But you weren't choosing not to speak.
No, I always try and talk as much as possible. I get in trouble sometimes because I talk so much.
That's great, man. That's really good. That is real. So you get in trouble for talking too much. That's as a stutterer, I just think that's great.
Yeah, because like the more I speak, I think the more I'll progress in stuttering, because I'm a huge athlete. So I play tens sports. Like I play a lot of sports. So I think that every dialogue I enter into, it's basically like a practice. And every time I get out of a dialogue, I can take stuff from that and put it towards my next speech encounter to help it.
Let's take a quick break and come on back and talk to you more about your life and coping with stuttering.
Hi, folks. I'm Mel Tillis, and nobody knows better than I do how stuttering affects your life. But help is only a phone call away. Just contact the Stuttering Foundation of America at their toll-free number, 1-800-992-9392.
Hey, this is Sarah DiAgostino from the National Stuttering Association. If you stutter, you're not alone, and you're listening to StutterTalk.com.
Well, welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter Reitz is here with Dylan Reed. Send your questions and comments, stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com. Dylan, you might be, well, you're certainly the first stutterer in a very long time to come on Stutter Talk, and you've pretty much said that you never tried to avoid or hide your stuttering. And I know you guys are out there. I just really don't know many people who stutter who didn't try to avoid, at least to some extent. Do you meet other stutterers like you who have these stories of not avoiding?
No, is the easy answer. The kids I met in my high school, you know, they didn't like talk a lot in class. They're very like quiet people. I actually went back to my high school a couple weeks ago, and I met this one kid who had kind of the same outlook on his stuttering as I do, but he just recently came to that conclusion, so that's good. But no, I've only met a handful of people who stuttered prior to going to the Friends Conference. I may have met, I think, 7 people who stuttered before I came to the Friends Conference.
And you got to the Friends Conference by way of Joe Klein, who's a professor up there at Appalachian State?
Yeah, Dr. Joe Klein. He's also the chapter leader of the App State NSA chapter.
So why did you want to go to the Friends workshop, and why do you attend your local National Stuttering Association meetings?
I go because I like to talk to people about it. The whole main reason why I never tell people I stutter is so that I hope that they hear it and they take enough interest to ask me about it, so I can inform them more about it to try and help other people who also stutter. Because I don't think a lot of the people know what stuttering is, unless you have it or a family member or friend has a stutter. And I think the more that people ask about it, like more fluent people who don't know about it ask about it, that they could tell their friends and their friends could tell their friends, and a snowball effect might happen. So going to the NSA chapter at App State, I saw a group of people who stuttered, and I'm like, this could be a lot of fun. Because I've only met a handful of people who was stuttered. And I went and I met these awesome people.
Yeah.
And they stuttered, which makes them even more awesome in my book.
Yeah.
But
I love that. I mean, it's amazing how many good people you meet in the stuttering world.
Definitely.
So looking back at, I mean, this is also unusual, where you seem to have been helped a lot by speech therapy, and all of your speech therapists were in the public schools. Is that correct?
Yeah. I never took an outside class for my speech. It was all just like that half hour a week or that half hour a month in the speech therapist's office, just talking to her.
Now you said, and I mean, I just think that's amazing, and it sounds like your personality and your parents had a lot to do with your success, but you were saying the biggest thing was talking about stuttering, but you also said you worked on speech tools. Would you be able to put it in a percentage of how much of it was talking about stuttering and how much of the therapy that helped you was working on the speech therapy techniques?
Yeah. Right now, as I sit here I think that the speech tools have the biggest impact in my speech right now. Through the easy onset, you know, the breath, the eye contact, that was, I guess, not drilled, but it was a constant thing through my speech therapy. And through 1st through 12th grade of speech therapy, doing these drills that I'm in college, and when I enter into a dialogue, I do breathe, I do use easy onset, I do keep eye contact, but it's not through my own, like, I'm not forcing it. It's just a habit now. Through those years of speech therapy and drilling these concepts into my head, it comes second nature to me right now. So I guess in the whole, what's helped me the most, I'd say the constant drilling of those speech tools is about a 65%, and the overall acceptance of my speech and talking about it is the other 35%.
Well, that surprises me only a little bit, because I thought you were going to flip it and say that talking about the stuttering was more important. So, Mike, and please, if I'm off base here, just let me know. But it sounds like initially it was the talking about stuttering, which was the big piece. And then as time went on, perhaps the speech tools became the larger piece. Or do you think that I'm overstating it?
How to word this? I would say I never really thought about my speech tools. I never really thought about what I was doing in speech class. You know, she just had her flashcards and I'd read them. I never really thought about it. But now I can look back on it, and the whole why I said that the speech tools help more is because when I ever get into a jam now, I can go back to what I learned in speech therapy and use it. If I only talked about my speech in stuttering class, I don't think I'd have these tools to the point that I could just use them in a day-to-day life without even just thinking about them.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here with Dylan Reed. Dylan, can't thank you enough for your generous time this morning. So I'm a school-based speech language pathologist, and when I write an individualized educational plan, an IEP, for a student, one of the things in North Carolina and probably nationwide we have to look at is academic impact. Does the child's disability or issue that we're considering impact their academics? And it sounds like the way that your stuttering impact, and because you sound like you're okay with your stuttering, but the academic impact sounds like it was sometimes you couldn't get started, so you couldn't participate. Somebody else would jump in because your words wouldn't come out. Were there any other academic impacts? Did your stuttering, was there something else about your stuttering that negatively impacted your ability to participate in class?
It's actually a funny story. In my sophomore year of high school, I took a biology class and we had to do a presentation. So my teacher left the room for our presentations because she helped us, so it would be a bias. So I had a math teacher proctor our presentations, and I give my presentation. I stutter during it and all of this type of stuff, you know, kind of a rough time speech-wise, because the scientific words have a lot of syllables and they're hard to get out. And I got my grade slip back from the math teacher, and I got an 18 of 20. I got the 2 points off in fluency, and she couldn't hear me correctly. So
okay,
that was the only time that my speech has affected my performance in school, was that a teacher didn't know that I actually stuttered. She thought that I was just nervous.
And how did you handle that? Did you respond in some way to that grade?
I laughed about it and brought it to my teacher the next day in class. And she changed it to a 20 of 20.
Hmm. Could you imagine a time in school, in college, or maybe even in high school where you would think a person who stutters would receive some accommodation? I mean, okay, like, for example, for this presentation you gave in science class, if there would have been a 7-minute time frame for each presentation, do you think it'd be reasonable that a child who stutters could have extra time because of the pressure to speak and because your stuttering would take up more time?
Definitely. I actually had to, through a construction class, we had to give speeches, timed speeches. So I've been in that situation too, where I had to give a speech in 3 minutes for a B, 4 minutes for an A, and if we went to 5 minutes, we failed the presentation.
Oh, wow.
So I just had to tailor my speech to, you know, practice my speech and practice what I was going to say a little more than the other kids, because the other kids can just speak, and when it gets to the 4-minute mark, just end it real quick. But being a person who stutters, I had to think through about what I was going to say and how I could say it so I could hit that mark and not go over and not speak for too little of time. So for the time speeches, it's all about time management and allotting time for stuttering.
So you did not get any accommodation for those presentations?
I guess I didn't put myself in the situation to get accommodation, because I did it on myself that I needed to get a 4-minute speech prepared and actually say my speech in 4 minutes and not go over. So I took it upon myself to not need the help.
I think you're an unusual case in the sense that, as I said earlier, you're one of the first people on Stutter Talk in a very long time who didn't avoid or try to hide your stuttering. You just sound like you are and were in a better place with your stuttering than many other people who I've met over the years. So if you're coming into a presentation at a young age but in a fairly good place, you might not have as many of those fears arise that really block you up even more and stress you out even more. It sounds like you were in a better place to look at your stuttering the way that you just described, where, okay, I've got 4 minutes here. I've got to get it within the 4 minutes. Okay, I'm just thinking out loud here. I keep saying it's unusual because it is, but I really admire it.
I'm a diamond in the rough.
How, when you're at a self-help group at the NSA or at the Friends Workshop, how do other stutterers respond to you being in such a good place?
They have a lot of questions about how I got to where I am. That's the main thing.
Do you want to share, like, one of the common questions you've gotten from one of your stuttering brethren or sisters?
Yeah. I'll actually share a bit that I got from a kid last weekend when I went, or a couple weeks ago when I went home and talked to some kids who stuttered at my high school. Because one kid's been in, like, professional speech therapy for a couple of years, and, you know, he's progressed a lot. And he was just asking me about college and how I interacted with people. because he's real, I guess, nervous about the whole coming to college thing and trying to meet new people. And he just asked me how I dealt with my stutter in a brand new environment with 15,000 people who are brand new to me. And I told him that my first week that I was up here in Boone at Appalachian State, I sat in the common room in my dorm for like 10 hours a day, just reading books, doing work on my laptop, or just doing anything. But I put myself in a place where I would meet new people and see new people. And every person I ever saw, I'd say hi and introduce myself. And it served a dual purpose, that I would meet new people and I could work on my speech. And if they asked me about, like, hey, it's nice to meet you, what was the small little speech thing you had there? Then I could inform them that, hey, I stutter. And they might have friends or their roommate that they'd say, hey, I met this kid Dylan and he stutters. And then they might come try and find me and see what this new kid's all about. So I just, on the whole front of how I dealt with coming to college and being around brand new people, I just told him that he just needs to put himself out there, because more often than not, people are genuinely interested in meeting a new person and a genuinely good person than a person who doesn't talk. You know, you're a lot more fun to other people if you talk and interact to them than to be that person who just says like 3 words a day, you know?
Oh, yeah. So Dylan, when is your stuttering the hardest for you to manage right now?
The hardest for me is when I'm around a close group of friends, because I don't really think about it, you know? I try and talk quicker to keep up, and I just lose all form of training, I guess. It's best when I'm talking to hundreds of people, actually.
But do you pull yourself into some type of a speech mode where you have a certain few rules or ideas you follow to try to speak as easily as you can?
Never. If I'm ever caught in a bad stutter, you know, I just stop and breathe. You know, for me, breath really fixes a lot of my stuttering issues, because I try and talk too quick, and kids who talk really fast, they have to breathe a lot more. Like, I couldn't talk really fast and breathe the same as I would as I'm giving a presentation, because the two speeds are completely different. You know, speaking amazingly quick, you have to breathe a lot more to keep up your stamina through your speech.
I see things a little similarly and a little different. For me personally, I don't talk about breathing, but when I was younger, about your age, I used something called pausing. Actually, we had Phil Schneider on the show recently talking about this, where pausing is placing some space between every couple of words, like I'm showing now. Now, I refer to it as rate control or pausing, but when you stop and put space between your words, you're taking a normal breath. So in it's similar in some ways to what you're saying, where when I had Phil on the show, Dr. Schneider, he was saying when you take a pause and you take a normal breath, you let your muscles that might be tense release the tension. Do you think that's similar to what you're saying in some way?
Definitely. Through the whole breath concept for me, whenever I'm having a really rough time, you know, I stop and I take a nice good breath. I don't like the whole pausing thing for me, because I think it makes me sound like I'm reading from a teleprompter. And I like challenging my speech, so I try and talk as naturally as possible. What's natural, like, for me, I guess. Because I see my friends, and I don't have one close friend up here who does stutter, and they all talk quick and do all this type of stuff. And I challenge myself to try and talk like that, control my stuttering.
Hmm. Now, did you have to deal with any teasing growing up or in recent years because of your stuttering?
I did. Through elementary school, it was a little more like kids being kids. You know, kids make fun of the things they don't understand and comprehend. So I was, I guess, wise from my young age, and I knew that these kids are doing this just because, you know, I'm different. And it's bad on them to think that because I'm different, it gives them a reason to make fun of me. And I just thought that, hey, and in a couple of years, I'll be better off than they will. Because if they had an issue with a person who talked a little differently than them, then life's going to come at them pretty hard. So I just kind of pushed away the younger ages and their whole, like, teasing aspect. But when I got into high school, kids were, I guess, more forceful with their, not attacks, but their teasing. And so I took a stance that when anyone ever tried to make fun of my speech or, you know, laugh during a presentation, I just, for a presentation, I'd stare at them. Because I thought that if they're making fun of my speech, they're uncomfortable. So I would try and make them as uncomfortable as possible.
Wow.
So just staring at them.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
They stopped. Wow. They would stop most of the time. And during the hallways, you know, kids would hear me speak and kind of like turn and give a weird face. And I'd just smile and nod. And if anyone would ever have a big issue with my speech, I would take the time to ask them if they had any questions about my speech. You know, kind of take the high road, I guess, the moral high ground, and not let their petty insults get to me, and take the chance to try and educate them about it. Because my thought is that the only reason that they're attacking a person who's different is because they're uncomfortable with it. So I would try and make them as comfortable as possible by giving them the most attention I could.
Well, you're saying you're trying to make them as comfortable as possible, but you're also, it's a little in their face too, right? I mean, you're
basically,
okay. So, so it's a little, I don't know if intimidating is too strong of a word, but you're letting them know you're doing something to make me aware of you and I'm aware of you.
Yeah, definitely. Because most times they try and like hide, like snicker here and there, you know, laugh. And I'm a very perceptive person, so I see a lot that happens around me. And if I see that, you know, I'm going to call you out on it. Because if you're going to call me out on my speech that I can't control, like, I stutter, it's a part of who I am. And if you're not okay with that, well, you were going to have to put up with who I am then. So I just throw myself upon them in the biggest way possible. That's give them the most attention that I could.
I'm sure there's a lot of people at home listening, cheering right now. That's it probably doesn't hurt that you're a pretty big athletic dude too, right?
Yeah, that never really was a downside to it, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been a taller, bigger kid my entire life, you know, played sports since I was 4. So, you know, I had that kind of big look to me.
This is Stutter Talk with Dylan Reed. I'm really enjoying this conversation, Dylan. Let's talk about dating. How has stuttering affected dating?
It's harder. It's a lot harder. The whole, I guess it's the anxiety aspect of it. I know if you want to, say, ask a girl out or ask a guy out, if that ever happens, it's never happened. happen to me. No, there's always that buildup of what you are going to say. And for most people who are fluent, it's just kind of like they wing it. They just go right into it and just get it all out there. You know, but being a person who stutters, it's a fair bit harder. Because if we try and wing almost anything, everything just goes to hell. Like, our speech comes 10 times worse. We can't get our words out. But of the people I've asked out, like, they don't have an issue with my stutter. But it's just, I guess, more of a personal thing that you have to get over. And I'm not over it 100% right now. So it's a long time coming for me.
Well, when you say you're not over it, is that to say that you still stutter, or that there are certain things about stuttering that you want to deal with better, that you're working on?
It's that I'm never nervous about my speech. But when I'm nervous about a situation, my speech isn't good. So I'm more nervous about the whole prospect of asking a person out. And then I just know my speech is going to go right to hell as soon as I open my mouth. So I just got to get more practice in the whole controlling my speech when I'm nervous. So when I say that, that's what I mean. Like, it's not that I'm afraid to speak. It's that I'm nervous about the whole situation, and I want to try and get better at that.
So, Dylan, has religion or faith played a role in how you view your stuttering or how you cope with stuttering?
I think so. It's played a big role, I would say, because the man I look up to the most is my late grandfather. He died a few years ago. And every day I try and honor him by not allowing anything to get me down. Because he was the biggest influence in my life. And I want to honor him by not shying away from any type of confrontation. And for me to not do a thing because I talk differently from other people, that's just trivial. You know, if people want to hear what I say, they'll hear what I say. And I've lived my life to honor him, and I just think that I wouldn't be where I am right now if I didn't have him there for a cornerstone, you know, a thing to lean on.
And how is that related to your faith or your religion?
Oh, sorry. He was a preacher, and so I grew up around having a preacher for a grandfather, and I went to church every day, and I want to live my life like him, because he lived an amazing life, and I want to try and be just like him, because he's my biggest, I guess, advocate and the person that I could lean on the most. And through my faith, I was brought up through my parents, who were brought up through my grandfather. And, you know, I just think that everything is going to happen, and we just have to roll with it. You know, and there's going to be a greater good along the lines in life. And I think that me being a person who stutters, that I have been given a certain lot in life, and it's my job to make the best through it. And I know that one day something's going to happen, and I wouldn't have been there if I didn't stutter. That's what I believe one day.
Last question. Can you think of something you'd want to share with the listeners about your stuttering and your grandpa? Was there something that he said to you about stuttering, or some stuttering experience that you'd like to bring up?
We never really talked about my speech. That's what, I guess, got me the most. Because if it wasn't, I'm not going to say important, because it's a very big important part of my life is stuttering. But people don't, how, I don't know how to say this. Here we go. Through him, I was able to learn that people like you for who you are and not because of how you speak. So if I would be a great person who didn't stutter, then I'm just an even more great person because I've been given a rough stance in life, and that communication is harder for me than other fluent people. And communication is a thing that you can't shy away from at all. You know, your entire life is based around the human interaction. So if I could control my speech and be comfortable through my speech, that I could further, I guess, live my life to a fuller extent.
That's awesome. I can't thank you enough for joining us today, Dylan. And I want to give out the contact information for your local chapter. So it's the ASU Boone, North Carolina chapter of the National Stuttering Association. Meetings are held the first Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Appalachian State University, Duncan Hall, room 109, Boone, North Carolina. For more details and to contact the chapter leader, Joe Klein, you could go to Stutter Talk episode 327, where we'll have up links, or just go to the National Stuttering Association's website, westutter.org, and go to the local chapters section for North Carolina. Dylan, again, thank you. It's been really great talking to you today, and I hope to get you back on Stutter Talk.
Definitely. Anytime. I appreciate it.